And I was thinking there, just as we were singing, between the lasagna and the apple crumble and the comfortable seats, I might have a struggle keeping you awake tonight, but we'll do our best. I want to talk this week really about just some very simple lessons from the life of Moses. And I would like to read tonight, please, from Hebrews chapter 11, first of all. Just a few verses from Hebrews 11, then a couple of verses from Acts, and then back to Exodus. But Hebrews chapter 11. And verse 23. By faith, Moses, when he was born, was hid 3 months of his parents, because they saw that he was a proper child, and that they were not afraid of the king's commandment. By faith, Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. Esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. By faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured, as seeing him who is invisible. Through faith he kept the Passover and the sprinkling of blood, lest he that destroyed the firstborn should touch them. By faith they passed through the Red Sea as by dry land, which the Egyptians, assaying to do, were drowned. Now, Acts chapter 7, please. And just for the sake of connection, just verse 17. But when the time of the promise drew nigh, which God had sworn to Abraham, the people grew and multiplied in Egypt, till another king arose, which knew not Joseph. Verse 20. In which time Moses was born, and was exceeding fair, and nourished up in his father's house 3 months. And when he was cast out, Pharaoh's daughter took him up and nourished him for her own son. And Moses was learned in all the wisdom of the Egyptians, and was mighty in word and in deeds. And when he was full 40 years old, it came into his heart to visit his brethren, the children of Israel. And seeing one of them suffer wrong, he defended him and avenged him, and was oppressed and smote the Egyptian. For he supposed his brethren would have understood how that God by his hand would deliver them, but they understood not. And the next day he showed himself unto them as they strove, and would have set them at one again, saying, Sirs, your brethren, why do ye wrong one to another? But he that did his neighbour wrong thrust him away, saying, Who made thee a ruler and a judge over us? Wilt thou kill me as thou didst the Egyptian yesterday? Then fled Moses at this saying, and was a stranger in the land of Midian, where he begat 2 sons. And now please back to Exodus chapter 2. Now, we won't read the whole beginning of the chapter, but if we can just break in at verse 8, please. Or verse 7 is maybe better. Then said his sister to Pharaoh's daughter, Shall I go and call to thee a nurse of the Hebrew women, that she may nurse the child for thee? And Pharaoh's daughter said to her, Go. And the maid went and called the child's mother. And Pharaoh's daughter said unto her, Take this child away and nurse it for me, and I will give thee thy wages. And the woman took the child and nursed it, and the child grew And she brought him unto Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. And she called his name Moses. And she said, because I drew him out of the water. Now may the Lord indeed bless those verses to us. Now in Hebrews 11, where we have read first of all tonight, there are a number of people who are mentioned. In fact, in the first part of the chapter, there are eight people, seven of them men and one of them women. And then we broke into the chapter where we do at verse 23, we hear of another seven men and another one woman. So there are 14 people, 14 men and two women mentioned in the chapter there. And you know that the beginning of Genesis was where most of them came from. We would have Abel, Enoch, Noah, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph and Sarah. That's in the first part of the chapter of Hebrews 11. And then we've got Moses, Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, David, Samuel and Rahab. All in Hebrews chapter 11. And just before we say anything more about that, I was looking down these names, you know, and I wondered how many of them, if we were compiling a great chapter of faith, if we had the job of compiling a great chapter of faithful men and women, would it be that we might have missed a few of those out? Now we might have said to ourselves, now, after what David did, you could hardly have him in there. And could you have Rahab the harlot? Could you have her in there? But you see, it shows us at least two things. We'll say two things just at the moment. It shows us, first of all, how gracious God is. And it also shows us that with God, failure is never final. You know, sometimes when somebody steps out of line as we would see it, or even steps out of line as the Bible would see it, there is sometimes the temptation to say, well, look, they've made their bed, just let them lie in it. You know, if the Lord had said that to Peter, what was it the Lord said to Peter? He says, now, Peter, he says, when you are restored, he didn't say to him, if you are restored, he said, now Peter, when you are restored, strengthen your brethren. Failure with God is never final. And here in this chapter, we have got this lovely selection of people from the Old Testament who were faithful. Not everyone who was faithful is in there, of course. It's a selection of people chosen by the Holy Spirit that we can learn from it. All different circumstances. Away back to Enoch. It's a lovely thing about Enoch that, you know, we're told, aren't we, that they looked for him. He was not found. Because God took him. I sometimes wonder, you know, and this has nothing to do with Moses, but I often wonder where they would have looked for Enoch. We're told that Enoch was a man who walked with God. He'd be a man who prayed. He was not found because God took him. There'd be people looking for him, you know. He was not found, the Bible tells us. They must have been looking for him. I wonder where people would look for us. Where we would normally be found. In our manner of life, where would people expect to find us? They look for, you know, and they would look in places, but that's not our subject tonight. Moses lived till he was 120. And his life really divides into three 40s. And I remember listening to a tape in the car once. And there was a message about Moses, and I've never forgotten it. The man who was speaking divided it up beautifully. He said the first 40 years, Moses spent in Egypt, learning how to be something. In the next 40 years, Moses spent on the back side of the desert, learning how to obey. Nothing. And the last 40 years, he spent leading God's people through the wilderness, learning that God is everything. 3 40s, 120. And when we get to Friday, God willing, we'll have a look at how Moses died. We'll have a look today about when he was born. And when we get to Friday, God willing, we'll have a look at how he died. I've been enjoying that myself, you know. And God buried him. God buried him. And we'll have a look at that. Mount Nebo. We'll have a look at how Moses died. But tonight, I just want us to see some things about, first of all, from Hebrews 11, and then we'll have a look maybe at these other verses if we've got time. It says, by faith Moses, when he was born. Now, obviously, that's not Moses' faith, because he was too young to have faith. But what the verse is saying is talking about his parents. For faith Moses, when he was born, was hid 3 months of his parents because they saw that he was a proper child. Now, we're reading Acts chapter 7 tonight, and that's spoken about again. The parents saw something in this child. They knew the situation that the children of Israel were in, because a lot had happened between Joseph dying and Moses being born. A long time had passed. And the children of Israel had grown in number hugely, and were told there was a king now on the throne who knew not Joseph. And the things that had gone on before were largely forgotten by him. He had no idea. He forgot all about Joseph. Didn't know Joseph at all. And he began, if you like, to panic, because these people were getting, they were getting stronger, they were getting bigger, they were multiplying, the Bible says. And of course we know that they were put under tremendous burden. But through this chapter, as you can see in all character studies in the Bible, you can see the providence of God. I was talking to Stuart yesterday about the book of Esther. And in the book of Esther, you know, there's this lovely thing about the providence of God. You know, the hand of God behind circumstances. We just see the circumstances sometimes. In the book of Esther, the name of God is never mentioned. It's the only book, I think, where the name of God is never mentioned. But in the book, you can see the hand of God working behind the scenes. And you know, that is true in our life. Sometimes we don't appreciate it all the time. But that is true. Circumstances come together that sometimes, well, sometimes we do understand. But sometimes we don't understand. And it's not something till a whole lot after that we do understand, if ever. But we can be sure that behind it, there is the mind of God. And when we come to this account of Moses, when he was born, he was hid 3 months of his parents because they saw that he was a proper child. They saw something in him. And they had heard the promises, of course, the promises given to Abraham about the promised one, and about the promises made that the land would be given. And they knew all of that. And they knew they had to be delivered. And would it be in this dear couple's life, Amram and Jochebed, Moses' mother and father? Would it be as they spoke together about the things of God? It's always good, you know, when a couple speak about the things of God. It's a good thing. When Amram and Jochebed spoke about the things of God, would they have said to each other, and I can't give you a verse for it, but let me say this, would they be saying to each other, could this be the child that God would use? Could it be this boy? And we're told in Acts chapter 7 that the child, God had chosen him for the purpose. He was a proper child in the eyes of God, not just to look at, not just physically. But he was brought into the world for the purpose of delivering God's people. He was a proper child. And also there's a bit, just, it's almost just on at the end of verse 23. They were not afraid of the king's commandment. Now that's easy to read, but it's not so easy when you're in the circumstances. There's a lot like that in the Bible. They were not afraid of the king's commandment. The king's commandment was the most awful thing. Just throwing male children into the river. They were not afraid of the king's commandment. Now we go on to, there's two things, there's two kind of times I was wanting to talk about tonight to you. There's two things. One, in verse 24 it says, when Moses was born. And then, in verse 23 it says, when Moses was born. And then in verse 24 it says, when Moses was come to years. So there's two important times there. There's the birth of the child. And then there's a bit later on when the child comes to maturity. And you know, I just thought, for a family week, those of us who have got families, a family week, it's a momentous time when a child is born. There's all the looking forward to the child being born. There's a bit of concern, and there's a bit of this, and there's a bit of that, and then there's the child born. A new life. And then, of course, there's the teaching of the child. And that doesn't start at school, that starts a long way before that. And then there's when the child comes to maturity. And I was just thinking, you know, about the responsibility on parents. Believing parents. Between birth and the child coming to maturity. Why, there's a number of things that we need to teach the child, isn't there? There's a number of things that we could do. Bringing up a child in a Christian home. Teaching the child from an early age. You know, isn't it wonderful how Moses' mother was sent for, and she actually got paid for it as well, isn't that great? She was sent for, and she'd be allowed to teach the child. There's the providence of God, you see. The child was put in the bulrushes, but the child was brought back to the mother. Moses' mother, when he got a bit older, she would tell him, wouldn't she? She would tell him about the promises. She would tell him Bible stories, as we would call them now. She wouldn't have called them that then, we would call them that. She would tell him about the promises God made to Abraham. She might well have told him about Enoch and Joseph and Noah and the ark. Told him about the promised deliverer that points forward to Christ. Sometimes we think, you know, young children don't understand very much. I think sometimes they understand more than we think. Told them the responsibility of teaching the child the things of God. Is there anything bigger than that? I've been thinking this week about that, and a lot for weeks before about it, really, because as I've been looking at this, it's been challenging me, really. What kind of environment, everyday life, you know, with the stresses and the strains and the getting out to work early and the coming back home at night and all the things that have got to be done, and teaching them the things of God. Would our home be different from other people's homes? Would they learn things in our Christian environment that they wouldn't be learning anywhere else? It's an awesome thing to me, that now. What a responsibility that is. I was thinking, you know, about what used to be called the family altar. I used to wonder, you know, I used to hear these kind of expressions when I was young, you know, when I was just maybe so high. People would talk about the family altar, and I used to wonder what the family altar was. But people seldom explained it. They used to say, do you have a family altar at home? And I used to think, think so. Family altar, what does that mean? A family altar is a very important thing once it's explained. It's a place where the family meet with God. As a family. To put it into everyday terms, it would be a place where the scriptures would be open. It doesn't need to be the same place, of course. It's not a particular holy place at home. But it's a place where the scriptures would be read. And it's a place where the children would hear us praying. They'd be there. I was thinking about Abraham too. You know, Abraham was a man who built altars. But you know, once there was a famine coming and Abraham decided that he was going to go down to Egypt. God never told him to go to Egypt. He told him to go to many places, but he didn't tell him to go to Egypt. But he went anyway. Sometimes you can do that, you just go anyway. Abraham just went anyway. And you know, I was thinking all the time he was down there, Egypt in the Bible normally always speaks of the world, I think. We need to explain what we mean by the world lately, but that's not for tonight. But it always speaks of the world. And you know why Abraham was there? There is no record of him building an altar. You see, he was living in disobedience. He had gone somewhere where the Lord hadn't told him to go. And you see, living in disobedience was a break in communion, a break in fellowship. And we never read of him building an altar. And you know, he took somebody with him. He took Lot with him. It's bad enough going somewhere we shouldn't go ourselves, but you know, he took Lot with him, and it did Lot no good at all. Because if we read in Genesis tonight, if we read in Genesis, we would think that when Lot looked at that, the well-watered plains of Jordan, where he was going to live, do you know what he said? He says, you know, this reminds me of Egypt. This is just like Egypt. There were things that he saw in Egypt that he'd been better not seeing. There were things that places where he went, but he'd been better not going. But he never forgot them. He shouldn't have been there in the first place. And you know, Abraham was the best of men. The best of men. The best of men make mistakes as well. And not only did he make a mistake, but he took somebody with him. The point I want to make about Lot is this. We never hear at all about Lot building an altar. We're here about Lot, and it's quite a kind of quaint expression. We're told that he pitched his tent, that would be literally of course, he pitched his tent towards Sodom. He didn't really want to live in Sodom, but he just liked to have a wee look at it. I'll not go too near it, but I just want to have a look at it. And that was only the start, you know. He could see it. And then later on, I guess in the next chapter, we're told that he was sitting at the gate of Sodom. That doesn't mean he was sitting at the entrance to the city. That means that he was in a place of authority in Sodom. He was what you might call a counsellor or something like that. He'd be a man who called the shots about. And it's very difficult in a mixed company to go into what was going on in Sodom, and I wouldn't even think about it tonight. You couldn't build an altar there. No place for an altar there. And then, you know, the angel of the Lord came to him. And the angel says to Lot, he said, look, go and tell your sons-in-law and your daughters to get out of here because God is going to judge it. And you know what Lot did? He went, and if you go back to the account in Genesis, you'll see it. He said word for word what the angel told him to say. He did not change God's message at all. He said it verbatim. He told them exactly. And you know what it says? This is the bit I'm trying to get to. You know what it says about his sons-in-law? It says he seemed as one who mocked. What does that mean? They thought he was joking. You see, Lot just thought that he could just turn on the preaching when he felt like it. I'll just live down here in Sodom with all this going on around me here. You see, no testimony to back up what he was saying. No testimony at all. His life did not fit his message. Now is that challenging or is that not? It's a fearful thing that to me. His life did not match his message. He was saying one thing and he was living another. And I was really thinking about Amram and Jochebed here. And they were bringing up this boy, you know, bringing him up, seeing him grow. All the things he could learn, all the things he could do this month that he couldn't do last month. And this year, what he couldn't do last year, the boy's growing. And they'd be teaching him and watching him. They would have a time together, wouldn't they? They would have a time together as a believing family. A time with God. Now, I don't know how many times they would have it. But it would be a good thing, wouldn't it? A good thing for a Christian family. To have a family time, nothing deep maybe, nothing fancy. Just a time when the scriptures were open. Maybe at bedtime, I don't know, it doesn't matter. Maybe at bedtime. Sometimes suitable. And I know, as well as you know, that sometimes it's difficult to get sometimes suitable. Because there's always something happening with our heads. In a family. In a job. In worries and concerns and all that goes on. We've all got it. What about the child? I have a recollection of my grandfather. A good recollection of my father too, mind you, and my mother. The recollection of my grandfather, and I didn't get the best of him. I think I was 13 when he died. But there's something stands out in my mind about visiting his house. And I visited it a lot. We lived in a wee town called Kilburnie. I'm sure you've never heard. Oh, a lot of people here have heard of it. It's the kind of stockbroker belt of Ayrshire. Kilburnie by the sea. And I went down to see him a lot. We lived at the top of the public park and he lived at the bottom. And I could just about see his house. And I used to love going down. He was a great man for preaching in the open air. He used to preach up at what they call the Kilburnie Cross. He used to go up there, on his own. He used to go up there with a load of people and they would just have an open air. And I always wanted to go. I always remember that. I always wanted to go. And he used to take me. And I would go up and listen to this meeting. But what I remember most is, I would get down to his house maybe when I was maybe 7 or 8 or 9 or whatever I was. And of course it would be dark by the time I was coming home, so my dad and mum would just walk down the park and get me and bring me back up. Do you know, I never left, ever. I never left that house once. Without the scriptures being opened, and without his prayer, never once. Now, I didn't think about that at the time. But you know, sometimes when you look back, I can't remember what you prayed about. I can't remember any of that. I can't remember what you read. But I can remember it happening. And you see, when I started to get a bit older, into teenage years, and then I get into my 20s, and I wasn't really going to say this to me, but I'll say it now because it's coming into my head. I started to do a bit at work, and I started to do a bit better, and I started to enjoy it, and I started getting, I started working all the time. I was never at home. I would go away first thing in the morning. I had to go up on the train to Glasgow. I would away in the morning, and I was back late at night. And if they wanted volunteers to work at night, I was the first up with a hand. And it got to the stage where they said, we never opened on a Sunday then, of course, I worked in a shop, we never opened on a Sunday, but they wanted volunteers to do things on a Sunday that you couldn't do when the shop was open or shift things about. And you know, I started to do that as well. And you know what happened? Up until that time, I think I'd read my Bible most days, maybe not for very long, but I'd always, since I got saved, I'd always read my Bible. Do you know, I gradually stopped. And I didn't even know it was stopping. I gradually stopped. It went from every day to maybe on a Sunday. I was going to say if I was lucky, but we don't believe in love. And then it would go maybe to once a month. And then it stopped altogether. And I was still going to the meetings, you know. Nobody would have seen, I don't think, nobody ever mentioned it anyway. They might still, maybe. Nobody mentioned it. But my fellowship with God had all but gone. And I still went to all the meetings. I was at the Lord's Supper, I was at the prayer meeting, I was at the gospel meeting. But the fellowship with the Father had gone. Now, I would never have been branded a backslider because I was still at the meeting. But that's what it was. That's what it was. And as things do, things got worse. And I'm not going into details with you tonight with that, because it wouldn't do you any good, and it wouldn't do me any good either. But the Lord took a dealing with me, and when I was 27, I took TB, which was a very unusual thing. In fact, when I went to the hospital in Irvine Central, it's not that now, I went into Irvine Central Hospital, plus it wasn't, but I was in. And they put me in the infectious diseases. And the consultant came in to me and says, look, he says, well, he says, there's a bit of good news. He says, you're the only person in Ayrshire with TB. I thought, that's not very good news for me, that is. He says, I don't know how you've got it, I don't know why you've got it, I don't know where you've got it. He says, it's usually down in the house to get it. He's a very encouraging man. Do you know while I was in prison to cut prison? Is this being recorded? When I was in hospital, there was a man sent me a Bible. And I want to tell you, I was really angry about him sending me a Bible. I really was offended at that. I said, what's he doing sending me a Bible? I've got a Bible. But I hadn't taken it into hospital with me, and he sent me a Bible, and I put it in a wee cupboard. That's all I had, a cupboard beside my bed. I put it in there and I left it. And I was there for 3 months, and into the last month in hospital, I was just really was getting fed up, because I had nothing to do all day. And I thought, I'll have a look at this. And I was just thumbing through it as you do. And I was looking at it, it's Psalm 119. That's the longest Psalm. Psalm 119. And I'm trying to think of the verse. I think it's verse 106, but it's round about there. And the first verse I read was this. Before I was afflicted, I went astray. Now, I've read that verse before, but I can tell you something. That hit me like nothing else has ever hit me. And then I think it's about 5 or 6 verses further down. Stuart's checking it, I'm all worried now. I think it's 5 or 6 verses later on, it says, it is good for me that I have been afflicted, that I might learn thy ways. And that was a real turning point to me. That was a real turning point. Nobody near me. Nobody preaching at me. Nobody doing anything. That was a real turning point to me. The point I'm making tonight, I'm about miles away from Moses now. The point I'm making tonight is about the family altar and the importance of the scriptures. The importance of teaching young people, their families and others. The importance of showing them the difference between a Christian home and a non-Christian home. I remember speaking about the quiet time once. I decided to speak to a group of young people about the quiet time. And I spoke and I thought we're all right. Because a boy came to me at the end. He must have been about 18. He says to me, can I talk to you, Rutherford? I said, certainly. Come on, and we'll go. I said, do you want to talk to me here? No, I said, I'd like to go somewhere else. So I went outside into another room. He says, we're talking about the quiet time today. He says, you know, I've got 6 brothers. And he says, I've got 5 sisters. And I feel sorry for him instantly. I didn't. He said, I've got 6 brothers and 5 sisters. He says, my mother works day shift and my father works night shift. And he says, Sky is on day and night. Sports, this is even through sports, wrestling, news. He says, whatever's on, it's on. And he says, if that's not on, there's music on. And he says, I find it, and I knew where he was going. He says, I find it very difficult to have a quiet time, and I could sympathise with him. He said, you know what I've got to do? He was only 2 years safe. He said, you know what I've got to do? He says, my neighbour has got a car. And he said, I said to him, he goes out during the night, he says, and he's back during the day. And he says, I said to him, do you mind if I went into your car and read my Bible? And he says, the man let me. And he says, that's where I do my quiet time. And he says, you know, in the summer, he says, we've got a swing park just up the road. And he says, I take my Bible up there. And he says, I sometimes sit in a swing. Break your heart, you know. He says, I sometimes sit in a swing. Or I sit in a roundabout. And he says, that's where I do my quiet time. You see, what I was used to wasn't what he was used to. I remember having every encouragement. My mother would have done anything, so would my father, done anything to see me read my Bible. That boy was different, you see. But you see what I'm saying? He saw the importance of spending time with God. Now, I was thinking about Moses' mother and father, and I've got to finish now, and we haven't done half what I've said, wanted to say, but we'll say it another night, God willing. The family altar. Those with families and those who don't. Couples. I don't think anything could draw a couple together better than reading from the scriptures on a daily basis. It's much better than going to sleep after watching a film. Or anything else. Just to spend time with God. I was thinking about Moses' home environment. It says, you know, in Genesis chapter 3 that his mother taught him, you know, his mother was there. His father was there. Taught him the things of God. And of course we'll know a good part of the story of Moses, what happened to him and where he went and all the different things. But I would like us to see him this week. And I'll try not to do any diversions tomorrow night, God willing. But I would like us to see various facets of his life. I'd like us to see, if we can, tomorrow night, his call and his sending. That's at the burning bush. That's a lovely thing. His call and his sending. And then I'd like us another night to have a look at the manna. You know the manna God sets? I love that, the manna. There was just enough for the day. And then I would like to look at the bitterness that was following that. They get right angry after it, you know. They got annoyed when the manna, didn't like the manna, they get fed up with it. What God sent them, they get fed up with. Oh, an insult that is. And then, as I said to you at the beginning, I would like us to see the end of Moses' life. And the children are coming in now, we're finished. The end of Moses' life. And trust that during these meetings, we'll make it something to encourage us, and something to challenge us, and something to help us as we go through before the Lord would take us home. Let's have a word of prayer. Well, God and Father, we do give thee thanks tonight for lessons we can learn from Moses who lived long ago. We give thee thanks for the relevance of Scripture. Relevant to every one of our lives. And we give thee thanks that thou art a God who knows us better than we could ever know ourselves. Knows our thoughts, our motives. Knows our hearts. And we come to thee tonight and ask that while we are here at Fiscally House this week, that we might enjoy thy presence with us. And as we hear the children, we give thee thanks for them and ask thy blessing upon them as they're here, that they might learn things in their formative years that would turn them into men and women who will serve God. We give thee thanks for those who look after us here, for Alan and for Anne, and for all those in the kitchen, for all the arrangements that have got to be made. We give thee thanks for kindness that's been shown already. And we give thee thanks for Christian fellowship with each other. And for the rest of this night, we would ask that we might be kept safe. And for this week, we give thee thanks for being together. And we'd ask for thy blessing now, in the precious name of our Lord Jesus Christ. Amen.